This is The Deep Dive with Brooke Spector. Investigative conversations about issues that impact our lives. Be curious. Friday mornings at 9 a.m. only on 101.9 Chai FM.
And good morning. And this is Brooke Spector with Deep Dive. We're live today, and my special guest, really, Conroy Scott, musician, singer, mechanical engineer, I mean, a range of talents. Before we talk to Conroy, let me just very briefly mention that in world politics, international relations terms, this week has been, really has been an extraordinary one. And let me just, without going into the specifics, because next week we'll be talking to some guests who will help me analyze where things stand in the Middle East from their perspective next week, after we've had a week, 10 days of relative calm. Let me just quote one of my favorite philosophers, Paul Simon. You remember Paul Simon, the singer, the composer. This comes out of The Boy in the Bubble, the song, looking up the album Graceland. These are the days of miracle and wonder. This is the long distance call. The way the camera follows us in slow-mo, the way we look to us all. I think that stands as a monument to what we have seen and what perhaps we will continue to be seeing in terms of the international scene. Let me move to our guest, Conroy Scott. I said musician, singer, mechanical engineer. Probably should have the order reversed. Singer, musician, mechanical engineer. And we saw him just a short while ago. What was it? A week and a half ago.
About a week and a half ago, yeah, 2 weeks.
Singing this extraordinary role, this role that most singers, I suspect, would be gasping for air by the time it was finished. The role of the prophet Elijah in Felix Mendelssohn's oratorio, named, not surprisingly, Elijah. And by my rough count, you sing probably about 50% of the time that the actual is taking place. And since it's for 3 hours, including an intermission, that means you're singing an hour and a half, more or less.
Most likely, yeah. It's quite a lot, but it's very rewarding.
Yeah, well, I want to get to that. I mean, it's a dramatic role as opposed to a narrative role, really. I mean, and I've been racking my brain over this, trying to think of other oratorios where the main singer or singers are singing their person rather than about their person. In this case, Elijah, in the role, is telling you, the audience, or telling us, the audience, what he's thinking, what he's undergoing, what he's being challenged by, what he's being tested by, and so forth, and up to the moment where the flaming chariot takes him away and he's gotten his presumably just reward. I know that you grew up in the Apostolic Church. How did you approach that role? How personal did it feel? How strongly did you pick on it as a living character as opposed to simply music?
You know, Brooks, a big part of Mendelssohn's Elijah is that it is written virtually the same way as an opera would be written. It is very dramatic, as you know. It's got massive chorus numbers in the orchestration. Is fantastic. And as you said, it doesn't happen very often when you have an oratorio where the titular character is speaking to you as the first person. Normally you would have an oratorio written and it is set quite differently, but I think what makes the Elijah special is, yes, it is the story of the prophet Elijah, but it's Elijah himself. that is telling us what's happening. So it's actually happening live. And I like to think that it's all quite, still quite relevant with what is happening today, where we have physical famine, where we have spiritual famine within ourselves. So it is still quite relevant today. And it is quite a daunting task to do the Elijah, but it is one that is very, very rewarding at the end of the day. And being a New Apostolic Christian, I have my root in the music of Elijah from quite a while ago. We would have sung most of the big choruses over the years in our church concerts and things. So I remember most of it from being a young child. And then growing up, you learn to, you familiarize yourself with the music more until you eventually have the opportunity to perform it as a soloist.
One of the things that when I knew parts of it, I didn't actually ever see it live in toto the way it was performed.
Yes, you mentioned that to me. Yes,
and it was, you know, it sort of knocked my socks off that way. I mean, just, you know,
yeah.
And yet I've learned that in the original premiere back in, what was it, 1846, the number of people on stage was roughly double the number of people.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was.
This work, and Mendelssohn wrote to his sister afterwards. He said the audience response was quite satisfactory. That's kind of an understatement, I suspect. They probably applauded for about an hour.
Yes.
But part of me says that I'm following a story rather than listening to a religious text. And at the same time, he's borrowed, the composer, that is, he's borrowed a lot of work, or at least in a sense, from some of Bach's best known choral music that's religious in its nature. And you almost hear the Bachian style woven into this much different work.
Yeah. I think with oratorio, there is always an element which joins all of them together, whether that be the Elijah, the Messiah, the Verdi Requiem. I mean, it is all secular work, and I think that is what ties all of them together, and I think that is a big part of why you can hear the similarities between Elijah, all the works, like you mentioned, like Bach, Handel, etc. Because it is secular work, it will always have, I think at least, it will always have that similarity to one another. But with it being the Elijah, like I mentioned, it was written like an opera. It is very dramatic. You have massive chorus numbers. You've got a wonderful orchestration attached to it as well. And you've got fantastic music for the soloists as well. And I think what makes it very special to me is having done it a few times now, having grown up, you know, and I mentioned that whenever I've done the Elijah, there has always been something relevant to me in my life when I've done it. And I think that is what made it even more special this time around. That and the fact that it was Richard's lot, basically, so to say, Richard Koch. But there is always something that is very special to me when I perform the Elijah.
We're going to take a quick break. We're speaking with Conroy Scott, a musician, comma, opera singer, comma, mechanical engineer, comma, and much more. First.
This is The Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
And we are indeed back. This is Brooke Spector, and my guest today, Conroy Scott, fast becoming one of my favorite singers in South Africa. Bass baritone voice, deep resonance, wonderfully. Just finished, in my opinion, a masterpiece of performance as Elijah in Mendelssohn's Elijah. But he's switching gears, and this is what I find fascinating. He's now going in a very different direction in just a few days with David Kramer's Orpheus McAdoo, which is a reworking slightly of a previous version of that musical play. And in a very quick summary, Orpheus was an American, Black American, who came to South Africa with a group of singers, and they performed all over the country in the 1890s and deeply influenced the way in which popular music was performed and written and listened to in South Africa. And for a long time, it was sort of written out of history until it gradually became re-known. I'm not sure that's a word, but that's what happened. And how do you make that shift? I mean, a couple of months ago, you were singing in Aida and in the Barber of Seville, classic operas, and then this exultant oratorio, and now a kind of 1890s pop singer. How do you do this?
You know, Brooke, one thing that I would give credit to is the music I listened to growing up as a kid. You know, my musical influences stemmed from our folks, from our family, also from church, and even my tertiary studies. I was fortunate enough to have a voice teacher by the name of Virginia Davids, and prior to her, the late Dr. Brad Liebel. And one thing they always encouraged was to not shoehorn yourself into a box, you know, to keep yourself versatile, because there are always other things that pop up, other opportunities which you won't know if you're able to do if you don't try. And in 2011, I was fortunate enough to go to Spain for about 6 years to do some Motown. So I didn't do opera, I didn't do classical music. For 6 years, I was doing Motown. So, you know, old school soul music from the 50s, 60s, and 70s.
That's wonderful music,
I think,
by the way. I mean, I grew up listening.
It is fantastic music, and it is such a shame that music like that isn't written anymore. Music that still made sense. Mm-hmm. Music that made you feel something. Mm-hmm. And it's music that I hope will last the test of time, as with classical music as well. But I think that is what helps me in an instance like this, where I come from, having just done an oratorio, having just completed another octave prior to that. What helps is the versatility that I learned growing up, listening to different genres of music. I mean, to this day, I would still listen to things like Black Sabbath or something. And I'd like to think that as musicians, you have to be versatile. And that's part of the reason why I play double bass as well, because it gives you a different appreciation for the music that you are actually primarily involved with. But doing music theater for me, as in the case with Orpheus in David Cromer's Orpheus McAdoo, it is just an opportunity to show people that, you know what, opera isn't the only thing we do. There are other types of music which we should love listening to, which we should love doing. And as in the case of Orpheus McAdoo, it is David Cromer. And I think a mistake or a perception people have when they hear Cape Town Opera, they think, oh, it's Cape Town Opera, it's an opera. No, it's not. It is a fantastic musical. It is a music theater showpiece which David Cromer wrote, which has beautiful music in it as well. And the story is quite interesting also. So it is, for us as opera singers, it is also quite nice to do something different, where we can actually use, you know, parts of our upbringing, so to speak, to showcase different parts of what we do as singers, not just the opera, but music theater as well, which is very, very interesting.
I hear your voice in my head.
Yes.
And I think three very, very different parts in the entire world of music that would sit perfectly on your voice. One is the role of Joe in Showboat. It's not a huge part, but it's got the best song in the show.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. Yes, it does.
And that song lives forever. Scarpia, which you know, would be out of Tosca, of course, and
which I would love to do again. I would love to do that. I mean, when we were up in Johannesburg a couple of years ago, and I had the opportunity to do Scarpia, it is I think to this day, out of all the roles that I've performed, I think that would be my favorite one.
Yeah, I remember that.
It's
I
just
saw that performance. Of course I did.
yeah, that thing, that role does things to you, if I could put it that way. If I could put it that way.
And the third role that I somewhere along the way I hope you're going to get to do is Porgy.
Yes. Yes. Yes, I would love to do that as well sometimes. But you know what, Brooks? If given the opportunity, I would probably do Crown in
Huh.
Paul Gambis. I would probably do Crown because apparently I make a good bad guy.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Porgy's sort of a
But yeah.
one-note Johnny, isn't he? He's a good guy and he doesn't get
Yes,
angry and
yes, yes,
nothing upsets him.
Yeah.
Crown is
I
mean.
always, I always, yeah, I always find. I always find the darker characters, I always find them a lot more interesting. Always, I always have. I always have. It's a lot more. There's a fascination that we have with these deeper, darker characters as human beings. We genuinely do.
Okay, well then there's a place for you in Rigoletto, isn't there?
I would hope so. I would hope so.
Now, I wonder about another thing. I've talked to my wife about this, and she
Yes.
did a lot of singing, and
Yes.
each singer has a very different way both of preparing for performance and then
Yes.
coming down to earth after the performance.
Yes.
Some performers essentially carbo load before they go to the stage so that they have enough energy, and some of them
Yes.
fast so they don't get too nervous, and
Yes.
then coming off of the stage at the end of things, it's either half a bottle of wine or a long walk in the dark at night. What is your
Yeah.
regimen? How do you deal with all this?
So you know, Brooks, that's an interesting conversation because, like you said, most singers we would have different things that we do before the show already. So what I would like to do is get to the theater quite early, whether that be 2 hours, 3 hours before call time or before the show time. So that it gives you time to settle. If you've got to look over certain things again in your score or in your music, it gives you time to do that. It also gives you time to warm up without stressing yourself out. You know, oh, I've got a half an hour left before the show. I need to warm up now. No, that's one of the worst things you can do. There are those instances when, yes, you don't have very much time to warm up, but more often than not, you'd like to give yourself time to warm up properly and then relax the voice a little bit. And just to keep it warm again before you have to start singing. We all have different rituals. I like to listen to different types of music before I have to go on stage. And that's not opera. So I would listen to anything else. After the show, what I would like to most do is just, have a chat, say thank you to people, everyone that's involved, stage manager, crew, and go back to the dressing room, unwind, and, take your time as you get out of costume and think about what just happened on stage as a singer. Is there anything I could have done better this evening, etc. But we all have different things. Like you said, others would go off and have lots of wine, etc. But I think for me personally, it's just taking a bit of time after the performance. Perfect example again would be Scarpia in Tosca a few years ago, when Scarpia gets killed by Tosca at the end of Act Two. When that curtain went down, I got up from the table, I grabbed my jacket, and I walked outside for a few minutes just to breathe because of the gravity of that opera, because of the type of character I had to portray. You have to become that person. You've got to live yourself into the mind of such a character, and then stepping out of that character is also quite hard. So you've got to give yourself a bit of time, whether that be a few minutes away from everybody else. But there are certain things we all do as performers.
Now, you have this regimen that you've sorted out, and you're now an accomplished professional, and you've given proper acknowledgement to the people who helped make you into the singer that you are. Are you beginning to do your own master classes or teaching of yet newer and younger singers so that what you know can be passed on to the generation
Yes.
that comes along next.
Yeah. But Brooks, to be honest, there is always the case, for argument's sake, we as a company go work in a different place. And what I personally enjoy doing is teaching younger singers. Whether that be when I bump into someone at a concert, or whether that be actually teaching students, etc. For us as performers, for me personally, it is always humbling seeing that there are still youngsters aspiring to do what we do. And I think it is quite important for classical music and opera to stay alive. So teaching is for me a big part of why I do what I do, whether that be teaching double bass, whether that be teaching singing, teaching people the various techniques that I and my contemporaries learned by people like Angelo Gabbato, Aviva Pallam, Virginia Davids, Kamal Khan, because there are all these little things that we as performers sometimes forget. And it is important that we are just constantly reminded of things that we've learned, things which have become second nature, but to be physically aware of them. And teaching is a big part of that, because when you teach someone, you are forced to remember everything that you have to remember in order to teach that person, in order to share your knowledge with the next person that aspires to do what you do. So whether that be actually physically sitting down in a lesson teaching someone, or whether that just be chatting with people, or even a masterclass, there's always that element of teaching the younger generation, element of teaching people that crave the knowledge, that crave what we do on stage. And whether that, like I say again, whether that be in a physical lesson, or whether that be teaching by means of standing on stage and people coming to watch, I'd like to think there are various forms of sharing our knowledge with people. And as long as I can get to do what I do and I still share that knowledge with those around me, then I'm happy with that.
That's funny. I'm glad you said all that, because when I was teaching at BITS, I was teaching a subject that I thought I knew rather well, since I had been practicing it for 30 years.
Yes.
And I found that in order to prepare intelligently for classrooms, I had to go back and relearn almost everything I wanted to say.
Exactly.
And it forced me really to deal with things in a way which I thought was very different than my previous career had been. Let me turn the topic now, if I might, to your next performance, which starts in, 4 days, 5 days?
Next week. We start next week at Artscape Theatre.
And tell me a little bit about Orpheus and do you somehow feel connected to him, or do you find him a strange character that you had to get to know, or how did it work?
You know, Brooks, with a character such as Orpheus McAdoo, what I think, and I won't say the most difficult thing, but what takes a bit of getting used to, is because at first when you start working on something like this, you don't know much about the character. You don't know much about the story, which could also be the case. Fortunately, with David having done it before a number of years ago, he offered lots of insight, he offered lots of information, along with the background work and the legwork that I as a performer would do. And given the story, you know, that it revolves around a man of color with his choir in the 1890s, traveling to places like Australia, the UK, South Africa, where we at the time still had massive issues of race segregation, which still happens.
Hey, I apologize. We're going to have to take a I'm told by my masters we have to take an ad break. Otherwise, we're going to be in trouble with both sponsors and ICASA. So let's do that. But we'll come back to Orpheus just after these ad breaks, if you don't mind. We're speaking with Conroy Scott, soon to open in Orpheus McAdoo, and just finishing up with Elijah, and a wonderful, wonderful singer. We'll be back after these messages.
This is the Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
And we are indeed back. And I am Brooke Spector, your host, and my guest today, and I'm really, really delighted, Conroy Scott, singer, musician, mechanical engineer, thinker about music. I tease him, but I just love this this contradiction in terms, in a sense. But before we resume our conversation, let me give an opportunity for another of our sponsors. Discover the delightful symphony of flavors at Friends Bakery in Sandringham. Every Friday, indulge in fresh baked flavored challahs like za'atar, homemade, and classic loaves, all perfect for Shabbat. Try the V Friends Bakery new pretzel challah. You'll be a fan for life, it says. For a limited time, enjoy free taster samples when you purchase your challah. Place your order easily via WhatsApp at 076-108-0085 and taste the difference that has everyone's taste buds buzzing. Visit Friends Bakery in Sandringham today and treat your taste buds to something extraordinary. And we are speaking with Conroy Scott, who is also extraordinary, and we're talking about his newest role starting this week in Cape Town at Artscape, Artscape, yes?
Yep. Artscape Theatre, yes.
Orpheus McAdoo, 19th century black man from America with his singers who came to South Africa and performed throughout the country American-style popular music, mostly African-American, gospel, or the origins of gospel. And you were saying just before our break that you had to get to know the man. What was there about this man that made him such an extraordinary figure?
You know, Brooks, when we first started working, when I first started working on Orpheus McAdoo, the character, you eventually realized that not much was known about him personally. Mm-hmm. We know more about the work that he did with the Virginia Jubilee Singers and the tours that they would go on for extended periods of time. Like I said, Australia, the UK, South Africa. What we know is where they are from, etc., and that he was inspired by the Fisk Jubilee Singers who preceded him. And his intention was to show the world, you know, and he mentions it in the musical. He says that one day the world will see us as we are, you know, not through paint and parody, because he was fighting the blackface, which was happening at the time, which was very prevalent at the time.
That's white actors performing in the
19th century. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, there were mentions when we prepared, the mention was made of certain black actors or colors, or actors of color at the time who also were wearing blackface. But that then, you then realize that a big part of it, especially for the people of color that were doing blackface, was that it was done out of necessity, that it was done out of trying to get away and to break away from what was known as black entertainment back then. When we do things like the cakewalk was intended as an invitation of the white slave masters and the way they used to walk. And there are many things in the story itself that you eventually think to yourself, okay, he did have a plan. And his intention fully and wholeheartedly was to show the world that, you know what, we are also artists. We have a different set of skills that we would like to bring. We have different voices that we would like to use. We have different bodies that we would like to use to bring happiness to people that listen to us. Because while blackface was quite prevalent, there was a larger part of who they were at the time that they wanted to bring across. You know, the Negro spirituals, which we to this day still love to listen to. And that is the kind of music, the spirituals, as it was known, that is the kind of music which they wanted to bring to the fore to show people that, listen, this is actually what we are capable of doing. And yes, it must have been very hard for them, especially when they went on tour, because they would stay away from, lack of a better word, they would stay away from stateside for years at a time. And obviously, it would have been very tough for him. Orpheus and his wife got engaged over here in South Africa. And, you know, a big part of their lives was spent abroad. He eventually passed on and died in Australia, which is on the other side of the world, literally to where they are from. So a big part of what Orpheus wanted to do through his music and by having Virginia Jubilee Singers travel and tour the world was, let's show the world what we are. Let's show the world what we can do. Let's show them who we are. And hopefully then through that, you know, we have different types of music, especially in Cape Town, where a lot of that music influenced what we know as you know, as Cape Townian music to this day.
When you were talking, I was trying to think of a way to describe his clearly conscious goal of showing his audiences and others what they really were and what they were made of. And I came up with a new word. He was trying to disothering himself.
Yes. In effect, that is exactly what they were trying to do. I mean, it got to a point where his closest confidant, Lucy Moton, where she eventually left him because I think she came to the realization that, you know, we can't go on like this. You know, we're not making money anymore. But Orpheus being Orpheus, instead of giving up, he then would try a different approach. And this is where the origins of ragtime music comes into the story as well. He happens upon these two guys and they introduce him to ragtime rhythm. And he falls in love with that. And then he takes it back to his Jubilee Singers. And then they start a different show, you know, where that is intertwined with the music that they're doing, where the singing is blended with the music and the rhythm of the ragtime rhythm bands, etc. So he did not want to give up. He wanted to show the world, listen, this is what we can do. We are a lot more versatile than what people think we are. You know, we can do so much more. We have these big, beautiful, natural voices, but yet we have this innate rhythm to make people feel things when we are dancing or when they are dancing with us or watching us dance.
We have to take another ad break. We are speaking with Conroy Scott, a man of many voices, mostly bass baritone, but in a new old show, Orpheus Makabu, yep, that opens very shortly in Cape Town. I hope that this is going to come to Johannesburg. Speak to David about that, please. See if you can't.
I will definitely.
Because I will personally buy a block of tickets for this. And I really want to see this. And we'll be right back after these messages.
This is The Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
And this is Brooke Spector, as it is said, and we are The Deep Dive, and we're live, and we're back with Conroy Scott. Starring in the old new or new old musical, Orpheus Makabu, which is a rethinking of an earlier version that David Kremer had put together. But that leads me to David Kremer's own journey, which started out as capturing the sounds of Cape communities and shows like District 6 and what was it called again?
The Kings.
Yeah, and the one about the guitars in the Karoo.
Yep.
This is the peril of live things when you don't make notes, you know. You have this. But this is something a little different in that it is reaching into another world of music and trying to marry an American story together with a South African one, and the way in which the influence fed into South Africa. Tell me a little bit about David Kremer and how he works on this.
You know, Brooks, it is first off the top of my head, I have to say that, you know, it's not often that as opera singers, you get to work with a South African industry legend such as David Kremer. You know, he doesn't do opera, he does music theater. And like you mentioned, you know, he's had some fantastic shows throughout the years, shows that have traveled Broadway, you know, Danger in the Dark, another one, Fair and Adult Kitty, District 6, the musical Cut in the Kings, you know, that he did with the late Tully Peterson. And throughout, I'd like to think that throughout this musical journey, I think David has been working to Orpheus McAdoo, because he has personally admitted that he absolutely loves the show. And I think it is part of that is the music itself that he's written, and that, you know, along with David Bovrov, the arranger, they have written fantastically beautiful music. It is the melodies in here give you earworms per se. Like I said, the story is quite interesting, but I think for David personally, this is it's a momentous occasion, as I'm assuming it would have been before, the last time it was performed. But working with David, he has a very specific way of working. You know, he encourages us that whilst we are in the rehearsal room, to almost not break out of character when you are on break, so to speak, you know, to keep that character alive when he comes to speak to you as a director or as a producer, speak to you on something which revolves around the character or the staging or the music itself. He then encourages us to respond to him as your character, which it helps a lot because, like I said, when you start to get to know these characters, you don't always know much about them. But as it develops, you start developing character traits, which you then believe is what the person would have been like. Because at the end of the day, as a performer, you have to make it work. You know, you've got to make the character believable. And with David's guidance, you know, you find these fine little nuances in characters which you then bring across on stage. Whether that be with the accent, you know, the deep Southern accent. We've got a wonderful lady, Claire Berlaine, working with us on accents, and she's fantastic. And she's up. And whether that, you know, it's finding these little nuances, whether in the accent, in the staging, with the way you hold your body, etc. And so working with David, it has its own, I won't say benefits, but it has its own, how do I put this? You know, it's really special, for lack of a better word, working with David. He has a very certain way of working, which we, as performers, always appreciate. Because, I mean, he comes from a different world of theater, where it's music theater. And I would really like to encourage people to come and see the show. It runs from the 21st of October to the 2nd of November. There are still tickets available from Web Tickets or the Artscape box office. And I really encourage people to come and see, because people think they hear Cape Town Opera and they think, oh, it's an opera. No, it's not. It is a musical, and it's going to be fantastic.
Conroy, I'm sorry we have to wind this up because we're running out of time.
No problem.
And they're going to pull the plug on me any second now. But you're quite right. Everybody should go to see the show, and you should come back and listen to us again next week on the Deep Dive. You all come back real soon now. Yeah. there's more Southern
accent. Yes, sir. There's deep Southern accent.
Yeah. Right job, man.
Thank you, Brooks.
We've been speaking with Conroy Scott, one of the stars of Orpheus McAdoo, and the extraordinary voice of Elijah in the just completed oratorio, and many, many more. We'll be back again next week on Friday mornings. And if you missed this, you can listen to it at 10 a.m. on Sunday in a repeat, or as a podcast, you can let your friends know. And to the audience, please have a good, safe, relaxing weekend. We'll be back again next week. Take care.